You're now tuned in to Cognitive Flow, brought to you by OptimalAnesthesia.com, where clinical insight meets focused clarity. Welcome, Deep Divers. Today, we're embarking on a journey, really getting into something we all know is fundamental, but maybe we don't always, you know, talk about it enough. The huge, often kind of underappreciated role of physics in anesthesia practice. Yeah, no, we're good with the drugs, the physiology, but the real power. It often lies in mastering the how, the physics underneath it all. This isn't about, like, first-year lectures again. It's about digging into those nuances that really take practice from good to, well, truly exceptional.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because pharmacology gives us the tools, physiology maps the body, but physics is honestly the invisible scaffold, the steel framework holding the whole thing up. We might know that intellectually, but how often do we truly feel those forces, you know, and anticipate instead of just reacting?
Exactly. And to show just how critical these invisible forces are, let's take a scenario. Pretty common one, actually. You're managing a two-year-old, maybe with a tricky airway, congenital anomaly, perhaps, and you're deciding, is it the 3.0 EDT or the 3.5? Half a millimeter difference? Seems tiny,
yeah.
Right? But anyone who does a lot of PEDS knows it's definitely not trivial.
And that's precisely where Poiseuille's law stops being a formula in a book. It becomes, well, potentially life or death. We know resistance. It goes up by the fourth power of the radius, or technically the inverse fourth power. So that tiny half millimeter. It's not a small step up in resistance. It's a massive jump. The expert insight here isn't just remembering R is proportional to 1 over to the fourth. It's internalizing that feeling for how much that changes things. Easy ventilation versus struggling, maybe desaturating fast, all because of a physical principle you didn't quite account for. That's physics right there at the bedside. Needs an intuitive grasp.
That's a great way to put it. Moving beyond just remembering the rule to having that intuitive grasp. So our mission today, let's unpack how these core physics principles aren't just theory. They're the actual language, the operating system for predictive, precise, and ultimately really safe anesthesia. It's about seeing the physics hiding in plain sight every time we turn a knob or look at a monitor.
Right, continuing with that scaffold idea. Pharmacology tells us what drugs do, fine, but physics. It tells us how they get there, how they exert their effect, take volatile anesthetics. Physics explains how they vaporize, their partial pressures, how they diffuse across membranes, how they eventually reach equilibrium in the brain and body. That's all physics. And physiology describes ventilation, gas exchange. But it's fluid dynamics, gas laws, pure physics that dictate how gas actually flows through circuits, how it overcomes resistance, responds to pressure, gets into the alveoli, gets out again. It's the mechanics behind the magic.
And it goes beyond just the drugs and gases, doesn't it? The whole OR environment, preventing electrical shocks, especially microshock, that's physics. Managing the crazy high pressures in gas cylinders safely, physics. Making sure our vaporizers deliver what they promise. Physics, even minimizing radiation exposure during C-arm cases, that's applied physics too. And the tricky thing, I think, is that failures here aren't always dramatic bangs. Sometimes they're subtle, insidious.
That's a really key point. The clinical insight is that physics gives us the how behind the what. It turns abstract laws into tangible safety measures, into the very monitoring we rely on. If you don't deeply understand these hows, your ability to see problems coming, to mitigate risk, it's just not as sharp. It's the difference, really, between just reacting when an alarm goes off and setting things up so it probably won't go off in the first place.
Okay, so let's make this even more concrete. Let's walk through some everyday OR stuff. But let's push past just reciting the laws. Let's think about the deeper implications for us as clinicians making decisions.
Okay, gas cylinders. We all know Boyle's law, P times V is constant, or P1 V1 plus P2 V2. But the expert insight isn't just pressure drops as gas is used. It's understanding that in an E cylinder, especially with oxygen, that pressure drop isn't linear. The last bit of the tank, maybe the last quarter, the pressure plummets much faster than the first three quarters. That little physical fact, it hugely impacts planning for transports or long cases where you might be cutting it fine, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Seen that bite people before. And then there's Charles's law. Adds another wrinkle. We know volume and temperature are linked, V proportional to T at constant pressure. But how often do we consciously factor that in? I've seen this exact thing at O2 tank. Charged, but it's sat in a hot ambulance in the sun. Gauge reads full, great.
Right.
We get into the nice cool OR, suddenly it's way less than full. It's a perfect kind of dramatic example of how temperature can fool you. The gauge shows pressure, not necessarily the amount of gas under all conditions. That's where just a basic understanding can lead you astray, critically.
Yeah, the hot cylinder is a classic teaching case for a reason. And speaking of critical, back to Poiseuille's law and ETTs, it's more than just remembering fourth power. For experienced folks, the challenge is really internalizing how sensitive small airways are. How a tiny change in radius isn't a tiny change in resistance, it's an exponential, potentially catastrophic increase in the work of breathing, especially in that two-year-old we talked about.
That analogy helps, right? The 3.0 is like breathing through a coffee stirrer. The 3.5 is maybe a drinking straw. Really drives home the exponential difference. But okay, for us, the next step is, what does that huge resistance mean for how we ventilate? Are we changing our eye time, our flow rates, thinking about pressure control versus volume control differently? Or are we just waiting for the pressure alarm to beep and then reacting? It's about applying that physics understanding proactively.
And that exponential thinking, it's not just tubes, it's the lungs themselves. Compliance change in volume over change in pressure, sure, that's basic, foundational. But the expert insight is grasping the dynamic relationship between compliance and its inverse, elastance. It's not just a static number on the ventilator screen, it's a vital diagnostic clue, changing breath by breath.
Right. We use those analogies. ARDS lungs are stiff balloons, COPD lungs are floppy bags. They're helpful starting points. But for us, the real challenge is reading the changes in compliance of the shape of the pressure volume loop and connecting that back to the physics. Are we just cranking up the peak pressure in ARDS? Or are we thinking about why it's stiff at atelectasis, edema, and considering recruitment maneuvers? Or in COPD, understanding that high compliance means poor recoil, leading to air trapping, that intrinsic PEEP, which means we need a longer E time. That's all dictated by the physical properties of the lung tissue and airways.
Switching gears to monitoring. Pulse oximetry, everywhere, right? Relies on the Beer-Lambert law. Okay, we know it uses two wavelengths of light, measures how much is absorbed by oxy versus deoxyhemoglobin, basic stuff. But the real clinical value for experienced practitioners comes from understanding the limits, the confounders. How do you interpret that SpO2 number if the patient has methemoglobin? Or carboxyhemoglobin from smoke inhalation? Or even IV dyes like methylene blue? The physics principle is elegant, but applying it reliably in messy clinical reality, that takes deeper knowledge.
I like the flashlight through stained glass idea for Beer-Lambert. Different colors absorb, tell you what pigments are there. Simple. But the critical part for us is knowing when that simple model fails. When does the stained glass analogy mislead us? When can you have a perfectly normal SpO2 of, say, 98%, but the patient is actually profoundly hypoxic because of CO poisoning? How does our physics understanding help us spot those dangerous disconnects between the number and the reality?
Good point. And one more critical area, defibrillation, Ohm's law. V equals I times R. Voltage equals current times resistance. Super important. But what often gets missed, especially in the stress of a code, voltage isn't the therapy. It's the current, the flow of electrons through the heart muscle that actually depolarizes the cells. And that current, it's massively affected by resistance, the R in the equation, which is super variable, unpredictable sometimes.
The water pipes analogy works well there too, I think. Voltage is the water pressure. Resistance is how narrow the pipe is. Current is the actual water flow. But if the current, the water flow is what we need, How do we actively think about resistance during resuscitation? How does skin dryness, gel on the paddles, good contact pressure, even how many shocks we've already given, how does all that affect the pipe diameter? And therefore, the actual therapeutic current we're delivering, it's definitely more complex than just dialing up the joules.
Okay, let's quickly recap those. Boyle's for cylinder contents, Charles for temperature effects, Poiseuille's for flow resistance, Beer-Lambert for pulse ox, Ohm's for defibrillation. The really deep takeaway here, the pearl for clinicians who've been doing this a while, is realizing that so many crises that look like pharmacology problems or physiology problems, the sudden deset, the vent alarm screaming, the shock that doesn't convert, so often the root cause is actually a physical principle that wasn't fully appreciated or managed in that specific dynamic situation. It's about getting beyond just reacting to the alarm, understanding the physics underneath, and ideally preventing it next time.
That's a really crucial shift in thinking. Okay, so if physics is this important, what happens when we overlook it, even experienced people? What are the real costs?
Well, physics knowledge gaps, even subtle ones, can unfortunately lead to preventable harm. Misunderstanding flow dynamics, maybe not setting ventilator parameters quite right for that patient's specific lung mechanics, could lead to hypoventilation, sure, but also maybe ventilator-induced lung injury using vaporizers. Maybe not quite getting the nuances of temperature compensation or fresh gas flow effects. You could underdose or worse, overdose. Not having a really solid grasp of electrical safety beyond just plug it in, right? You could expose a patient with a pacemaker to microshock risk, fatal risk. And even radiation physics, not consistently applying inverse square law or minimizing beam time during fluoroscopy, leads to unnecessary chronic exposure for everyone in the room.
That really drives it home. Physics isn't some optional extra credit. If you ignore it, you're neglecting fundamental safety aspects. Maybe not always obvious, but definitely profound.
And it's worth remembering, anesthesia didn't just magically appear. Its whole history is tied to physics discoveries. Go back to the 1600s, Robert Boyle, pressure volume laws, foundational for storing gas, for understanding basic ventilation. Then 1700s, 1800s, you get Dalton Henry, laws about partial pressures, gas solubility, absolutely crucial for using the first anesthetics like nitrous, ether.
Yeah, and then the 20th century just accelerated everything. Precision flow meters, temperature compensated vaporizers, capnography, all direct results of applying physical principles in clever ways. And now, 21st century. We've got BIS monitors using signal processing, near-infrared spectroscopy looking at tissue oxygenation, super smart ventilators, all driven by complex integrated physics. It really shows that every big leap forward relied on understanding and harnessing physics better. It revealed new hows for the whats we wanted to achieve.
Exactly. And the anesthesia machine itself, it's basically a mini physics lab right there in the OR. You've got high-pressure gases being carefully stepped down by regulators, flow meters working on principles of how fluids move through tubes, vaporizers cleverly using vapor pressure, temperature, latent heat, monitors translating physical signals, light, pressure waves, electrical activity into data we can use. Understanding how all those pieces interact physically is key to using the machine effectively and safely.
So when you put it all together, the anesthesiologist isn't just a drug administrator, not at all. You're much more like a systems engineer, constantly managing a complex physical system. You are essentially an applied physicist in scrubs, making constant adjustments based on physical principles to keep the patient safe. It shifts how you see the role, making it much more proactive.
Yeah.
Right, so looking ahead, how is this foundational physics going to shape the future of anesthesia? What's coming next?
Oh, the future looks incredibly physics-driven. We're already seeing it. Ultrasound for blocks, that's the piezoelectric effect, pure physics getting more sophisticated all the time. Smart ventilators are coming online using machine learning models that are themselves based on the physics of lung mechanics, adapting breath by breath. And further out, people are working on things like quantum sensors, nanotechnology, for incredibly precise real-time monitoring, maybe even targeted drug delivery. All of it relies on leveraging fundamental physics in new ways, often at tiny scales.
That's a really powerful thought, a pearl for all of us. The future of our specialty isn't just influenced by physics. It's going to be enabled by physics, driven by technology built on these principles. The better we grasp these fundamentals now, the better equipped we'll be to use and maybe even help develop those future tools. So, you see, physics isn't abstract. It's not distant. It's right there, the pulse of the OR. It's pervasive. It's powerful. Every single time you make an adjustment, turn a dial, check a monitor, place a sensor, you're applying physics. Maybe without even thinking explicitly about the law behind it. It's about learning to see those invisible forces that really dictate success or failure.
And that really brings us to the final key point, the core message maybe. Anesthesiologists aren't just physicians. You are applied physicists working right there at the bedside. And truly understanding these principles deep down at that nuanced level, that is understanding anesthesia at its core. It's what separates good from great, reactive from proactive.
So here's something to think about as you go back to your practice. How does really understanding these physical laws change things for you? Does it just help you react better when something goes wrong? Or does it empower you to anticipate, to prevent complications before they even start? Next time you're adjusting flows, or dealing with a pressure issue, think about your mental model of Poiseuille's law or Ohm's law or whatever applies. Is that understanding helping you predict what might happen next? Or are you mainly just reacting to what's already happened? Food for thought. Thanks for joining us on today's episode of Optimal Anesthesia. For in-depth notes, visuals, and bonus content, head over to optimalanesthesia.com. And if you're looking for exclusive podcasts, early releases, and deeper clinical insights, you'll find all that at patreon.com/optimalanesthesia. By Rennie. Support the learning, support the craft. See you in the next one.